Welcome to the Vet Show, part of the Coach Rob Podcast Network. Coach, how are we doing?
Good afternoon, my man. Long time no speak.
I know.
I don't know about you, but with Mammoth and then with World Vets coming up, it is just amazing how busy this time of the year has gotten. It seemed like we were talking about it, it was out in the distance, and then boom, it's right on top of us. So it's good to see you again, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, I want to welcome all the listeners, all the viewers on YouTube. Make sure you guys hit that like and subscribe. It helps us out. We say it every episode, and make sure that you leave comments, send us DMs, give us your feedback. We're always into it because honestly, Coach, I got a lot of feedback. I know you did also on the last vet show that we did, and that was preparing for Mammoth, right? Mammoth is a huge vet motocross race out here in California. And I got a lot of feedback saying, okay, guys, I went and raced Mammoth, or I went and raced, you know, a local series. The summer series are starting all over the country. And I'm tired. I'm like, I'm smoked. How do I recover from these things? Right. So
yeah,
I think that is a big question is, as us getting older, right, we recover slower, and we got to do recovery in a little bit different fashion than maybe a young whippersnapper. Right. So I think we'll touch on that if you're okay with that today.
Yeah, I think it would be a great one if you've got the time and the headspace to go through it. One of the things that I always want our listeners, particularly for this show, to keep in mind, how many things do you as a vet rider get done by noon on Monday? Compare that to somebody who gets paid to essentially get up, ride, cross train, eat, sleep, and repeat. Where for yourself, Dan, you've got a little one in your family that's riding. So you've got her bike, you've got her gear, you've got to get her to the track. You got to get her signed up. Oh, by the way, you've got your bike, your gear. You've got to get yourself signed up. Oh, wait a second. You're at Mammoth and you're there for a week. First 3 days of the week is all about her. You're out in the sun. You're at the elevation. You got a very busy schedule, especially at Mammoth, where you have to go in and back out and back in and back out. Constant movement, perpetual movement. And then you get to race at the end of the week. Stop and think about how many obligations that has. And the reason why I bring it up at the beginning of it is sometimes a vet rider will be like, man, I'm just getting soft. And I'm like, no, you're just getting spread more and more thin because your pie is getting cut up. And it's not us doting all over everybody. It's just the idea of keeping things in perspective. There's not a professional athlete that would say it would be easier to be an amateur because they know if we have, you know, you take a professional racer, they've got somebody driving their bike to the track. They got somebody driving their motorhome to the track. They've got a mechanic. They've got a tire specialist. They've got a chassis. They've got a gear deal. They've got a helmet. They've got a goggle, right? Think about it. You, the vet rider, you're all that. Your product rep, your financer, your sponsor, your cheerleader, your mechanic, your rider. So when we get these types of comments that come in, like, gosh, I feel like I've been hit with a meat tenderizer. Yeah, stop and think about what you do in 24 hours. It's a tremendous amount.
And this kind of hits close to home, Coach, because I wasn't able to make it to Mammoth this year. Mm-hmm. And I have family obligations. And one of those family obligations this weekend was helping my mother move. Mm. And in fact, I was joking with Daniel Blair last night on the Main Event Moto podcast about, you know, we go and we ride, right? And generally, like when you go ride for the day, you come home, you're not that sore, right? Because we have muscle memory, and it's just that those are the muscles we use when we ride. But Coach, after helping my mom move for 2 days, I woke up this morning and I am like, I feel like I went through war.
Yep.
And so maybe we can get into that too, right? Just on an everyday basis, you know, how can we recover? And I know a lot of these riders from Mammoth, it was warm this year, mm-hmm. and it was hot and grueling. The altitude plays a role, right, in things. And so I thought this was a perfect topic to get into for this show.
First and foremost, my condolences on the sore muscles. It's kind of like for those of you that have a garden or you like to do some yard work, and maybe it's been a while since you've gotten out there, and then the next day your hamstrings feel like they're tighter than a guitar string. You're, like you said, Dan, you're in great shape, but the specificity necessary to squat down, lift boxes, move things, push, pull things, you know, backing down a dolly, loading a dolly, just tilting a dolly back, completely different use of same muscles, just being used differently.
Well, and that's when you really start feeling old, Coach, because back in the day when I was younger, you could do all that. It's not a big deal, but man, I'm like, my back's hurting this morning. And yeah, so it was an eye opener. I'm sure the vet riders can can relate to what I'm feeling.
Well, here's something that's maybe would be overlooked if we weren't talking about it. If you go and you ride, anybody who's listening, when you go ride, you historically know what's been sore. Low back is sore. You foam roll your quads in between your shoulder blades from pulling back on the bar, your rhomboids. So you get on a tennis ball and you foam roll it. Calves are killing you from being on your toes all day. Maybe you get the Theracane, you go into the upper shoulders because you're looking up the way you're supposed to on a rough track. You know what to do when you come home from that. If you're to ask the average individual, hey, what muscles did you just blow out today moving your mom for 10 hours? Most people would kind of guess, maybe my biceps, triceps, some of the big muscle groups. Well, ironically, most of the soreness that you're going to feel when you do something different from the first time are more of stabilizers than the actual primary movers. I mean, let's face it, a bicep curl is a bicep curl. However, if you're walking around carrying a box and your arms are at 90 degrees, people don't realize that. If you straightened your arms out, you wouldn't have any load on your biceps. But because we're not professional movers, we pick a box up and we hold our arms at 90 degrees. Well, now we've got the bicep in, you know, a hold state, lifting 50, 60 pounds as you move it from the house to the truck, from the truck back to the house, where if you just could straighten your arms out. So because we don't think like movers, we don't do it efficiently. It's kind of like, and I'm going to, for somebody who's not very good on a motorcycle and you watch them, right? You're an A-class rider, someone like your riding capability, Dan. And then you see somebody who's new and you're like, oh man, if they went faster, it would be easier. And to that person, they're like, you're crazy. I'm going as fast as I can comfortably. You're like, no, dude, if you go faster, it's easier. It's all about efficiency. And it's the same thing here. You got through the day because you're strong enough. The problem is you didn't know how to take care of your body post moving instead of post riding. And therefore the next 2 days, that rule of 48 hours comes down like a guillotine. And you're like, and I want to make sure for those who are taking notes, always remember the rule of 48 hours. Think of it, visualize it like the tail of the snake following the head. Most people, when they lift weights, if you've done it for any period of time, you recognize 2 days later, you're going to be sore. Well, that applies to everything. If you nail your nutrition, you're not going to be as sore 2 days later. If you use the Debbie Downer, if you screwed your nutrition up on Monday, you're going to feel it on Wednesday. That's why same thing when it comes to sleep. Your race sleep isn't Friday night for Saturday. It's actually Thursday night. That's been proven over and over again. So when you just start stacking all this up, and I feel bad for you, I always say to Michaela, when you're moving, you can't have enough arms, man. You can't have enough friends.
I know. Well, enough about me and my problems. I guess I gotta help more people move. But you know, the Southwick was this weekend, pro motocross. Adam Cincirillo made his debut as a commentator, which I thought was awesome, Coach. You know, I'm a huge AC fan, so I was happy to see him back at the races. But he made a comment during one of his hits, and that was one of the keys to Southwick, and it's going to be one of the keys to any summer off-road motorcycle event, is recovering, right? And one of the keys for him was between motos was to stay cool and carb up, right? And I know we've talked about carbing up before the motos and things like that, but I wrote down this question because I knew we were doing the show today and this would kind of hit home. A lot of us, right, we're not elite athletes. We're not on, you know, the average vet guy is not on a quote unquote program, right? They're not on one of the Complete Racing Solutions programs. They're just a casual rider racer, right? And so we don't typically, the average guy is not carbing up before motos. They're just trying to get to the moto and make it through the moto, right? But if they wanted to take it a step further, and we had a rider that wanted to start today, right? Hey, I want to make a change, but I didn't carb up over the weekend. I didn't eat appropriately. I didn't get the right amount of rest. How could a guy replenish the carbohydrates in his body on a Monday from riding, you know, during the weekend or racing during the weekend?
You bring up a really good point, because whether you're getting paid to race or you're not, the principles of physiology and the principles of nutrition apply. And I think that what you just said is a great way to set the tone for that. You cannot take in, you cannot digest, your body cannot assimilate, your body cannot convert more than 300 calories an hour. If you have a piece of paper and you draw an arrow up, that would represent intensity. and draw an arrow down right next to it, that would represent food complexity. Just plain and simple. The magic number is 2 hours. So if your gate drop is at 10 a.m., you need to be finished eating your breakfast by 8 a.m., gives your body time to digest and purge. That way you don't get any GI distress. And then what you do is you milk your sports drink for that last 35 to 60 minutes. What that's doing is that's topping off your electrolytes and easily digestible carbohydrates. But people mess this timing up quite a bit. 2 hour window. And then during that last 2 hours, you don't overdo it. You just kind of milk to keep your blood sugar levels topped off. Your liver feeds your brain, your muscles feed your movement. So when AC is talking about staying carbed up, what he's not able to talk about because of the limitation of time is what are you carbing up with? That's where something like an energy fuel is going to come into play. It's not a sales pitch on energy fuel. It's the idea that we understand that you've got a short window of time and you can't take in more than 300. If you look at our calorie density, it's not a coincidence that it's right at 300. When you come back to the original question, or rather a statement that you made, why should you not carbo load? This is an old school ideology, right? If you go back, I'm gonna show my age here. I graduated from high school in 86. It was the idea that you would starve the body of carbs for 3 to 4 days. You would eat a lot of carbohydrates the day before, and then you're supposedly gonna perform better. Well, what research has validated, and again, if you're taking notes, I want you to write this down. For every 1 gram of carbohydrates that you eat, a fruit, a vegetable, a grain, a bread, a pasta, when your body converts it from an edible carbohydrate into stored glycogen, it's a very fancy word for stored sugar, your body retains 2.5 to 2.8 grams of water. So Dan, think about this. If you quote unquote cut carbs for 5 days, you're going to dehydrate yourself. You're going to lose 5 to 6 pounds. Everybody gets excited when they see that on the scale. That's just dehydration. Then you go and you eat that the night before the race. Now, this is where I need everybody's undivided attention. This is why I appreciate everybody who makes this podcast a priority. Can you imagine, right? You go and you eat a Jethro-sized plate of spaghetti. You have some pizza. You have some pasta. You're carbo loading. Well, that's like me taking an 8 or a 10 pound dumbbell and I go and I stick it on the right side of your frame. I take a 10 pound dumbbell and I attach it to your front number plate. I take a 10 pound dumbbell. I can move it around the bike and or the body anywhere. How comfortable are you going to be, Dan? How balanced is your bike going to feel if I take 10 random pounds and I wrap it around your belly? All of a sudden your left, right, top, bottom, front, back is going to be out of balance. So what I always say, and I want all the listeners to do the same thing, eat what you normally do. When you go and you ride on a Wednesday, I want your body to feel on Saturday morning what it felt on Wednesday. That's why we don't carbo load. Now, we're not going to argue the idea that stored sugar, glycogen, it is the body's preferred fuel source. We get that. We all agree on it. But you don't want to deplete the body and then overload it because you're going to put on unwanted water weight. You see the difference? Yeah. If you're eating fruits and vegetables and you're staying hydrated every day, your body doesn't know if it's Wednesday or Saturday. It's going to perform exactly the same. You don't want to fall into that trap of carbo load and then wonder why you feel so sluggish. And this is the word I hear all the time. I didn't feel balanced on the bike. I felt sluggish. Well, that's because I took this 10 pound dumbbell and I just slapped it in your britches, right? So I can slide it down the back of your pants. And all of a sudden you're standing up and sitting down and you're like, man, this is a lot of work. Yeah. You've got 5 to 8 pounds of water that you just put on your body in 24 hours. So that's first and foremost. But when you look at the comments that you made and then the question that you asked, how do you recover? Fruits, vegetables, and lean protein. And you're like, yeah, but protein doesn't have carbs. You're right. But when you're recovering from a race, if you're watching this on YouTube, look at my fingers and just imagine that's a muscle fiber. Well, when you tear the muscle fiber down, it starts to separate. That's where you get the muscle tenderness. And that's where you get the inflammation and puffiness. You may find your wedding ring. It's going to be a little bit harder to slide around. You may find that when you step on the scale, you might be up a couple pounds. That's inflammation from muscle teardown. It's very, very important that people realize that. So when you look at something like, we have a product known as Recovery Fuel, it's providing the ratio of amino acids and carbohydrates to give the body what it needs to start recovering immediately. So that's the best way to do it. And again, it's not a sales pitch for our products, but I want you to always understand the science behind it and then know when to use it appropriately. Because if you nail, especially when you're dealing with Mammoth with a multi-day race, Loretta's the same way, World Vet's going to be the same way. As soon as you cross that finish line, the clock begins on recovery for your next race, whether that's in an hour, or maybe if you're at Loretta's, it might not be for another day, but the clock starts. Dan, for those of you who have listened, for those who have listened to you and I in the past, we talked about this real fancy sounding term, glycogen synthase enzyme. It's nothing more than an enzyme that's going to be highly active as soon as you're done working out. So if you go and you do a 6-minute moto, that enzyme is activated. If you go and you do a set of weights, that enzyme is activated. If you do a cardiovascular for an hour, it's activated. But that enzyme only stays active for about 15 to 20 minutes. So when you recognize that you've got a very short window of time to leverage that enzyme, and the reason why the enzyme is important is because it actually facilitates the absorption of sugar back into the depleted muscles. But when you're done at the end of the day and you introduce a little bit of protein, that enzyme sucks both carbs and protein in, that speeds up recovery.
Interesting.
You think about it. If you come to me and say, Rob, I must be in really great shape because I wasn't sore after racing Mammoth. Could be. Or was that because you nailed your recovery? I'm not arguing that you weren't in shape going in, but was your residual soreness less because you nailed recovery? Only way we can answer that is look at your behavior. Look at your actions. You see the difference?
Yeah. Now, is there a window for recovery? I know you said that, drinking the recovery fuel will start that recovery process immediately. Mm-hmm. Can a guy race Sunday, hit the recovery fuel on Monday, or is there a window where it's no longer valid?
It's always going to be valid. It just becomes like a sliding scale. It becomes less and less effective. So if you nail it in that first 15 to 20 minutes, you're going to maximize the absorption of those carbs and protein. Now you get, and especially we opened up today's conversation with the idea that all of our vet riders, especially if you have another one racing, right? You're worried about his or her bike and gear and getting them to register in registration and getting them to the track on time and all that goes into it. Well, we're not going to say that if you eat carbohydrates 3 hours after your race, that it's not going to help. Of course, it's going to absorb. It just won't absorb as quickly and as effectively. I know that may sound like a redundancy in terms, but it's not. If you think about it, if I've got a dry sponge, if I put a droplet of water on it, because the sponge is dry, it sucks it right in. If I have a saturated sponge, it's still going to absorb it, but not at the same rate. That's just, if you kind of reverse that entire scenario, if your body, if you've been kind of grazing, you're slowly bringing it in. What we want to recognize is when you go out and you ride really, really hard, you've drained that moisture out of that sponge. The muscles are drained of electrolytes, sugar, and water. So what the purpose of a sports drink like energy fuel is to replenish. See, this is where electrolytes have a dual role. Electrolytes are part of the muscle contraction at a chemical level. So think about spark plug hitting fuel and creating combustion. That's what an electrolyte does with a muscle contraction. Electrolytes also facilitate the absorption of water. If you want to look it up, it's called osmolality. This is why the concentration of carbohydrates in the energy fuel is so important. So when we ask you to do 2 scoops to 20 ounces of water, we've already figured out what that concentration of carbohydrates is to optimize absorption. That's the key word, absorption. Because if you get that concentration rate too high, the body cannot assimilate it. It won't absorb. So what happens is you don't quench thirst, and then you run that condition known as hyponatremia that we've spoken about previously.
Yeah.
So when we're looking at, hey, I understand you got distracted and you may not have been able to take advantage of that 20, you haven't screwed the pooch. It isn't over. It's just going to be a little bit harder for your body to get in what it could have gotten in initially. That's why knowledge is power. Like, for example, when Dan, you go to Loretta's, we know you're going to go in the impound area. Your mechanic is going to have that water bottle and he's going to know that he needs to hand it to you as soon as you come in. Even if you've got to go do whole shot presentation, top three, you're on the podium, you get all... If you watch the very top guys, they're already sipping. They're already sipping, especially at Loretta's, because we're only racing one time a day. Then that's what makes Loretta's so unique, is 6 days of racing one moto per day. It's not bad if you have a 9 a.m. moto, but what happens when you get a 2:30, a 3, a 4, maybe even a 5 o'clock, right? You got to eat breakfast, snack one, snack two, lunch, snack three, get your last meal in by 2, go race at 4 o'clock. If we don't practice that, and that's something that we're going to talk about when we get to Loretta's as a vet, it's the same for amateurs as well, as well as for the young riders. But nutritional timing, think about it, Dan. You've gone to some races where you've seen kids have 6-8 motos in one day.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So you may have 2 hours where you're racing, it seems like every 15 to 20 minutes, then you might have a 2 hour window with no racing whatsoever. You've got to remember that even though you as an athlete, you might be walking around saying hi to your friends, watching some racing, behind the scenes, your body still needs something. If you think about it mechanically, what do you do every time you're getting ready to go out on the track? You check the same three things every time.
Yep.
And check the radiator, you're going to check the oil, you're going to check the fuel. Yep. Assuming SAG is set and all the others that are done, right? Tire pressure and all. But for the most part, you're making sure that those three, well, your radiator is your hydration, your fuel is your food, and the high quality fats that you've been eating all week is going to be the high quality oil that essentially MCT oils that feeds the adrenals to handle the stress of racing. So I always like our listeners to think about the parallel with racing to, the mechanical realms of racing, apply that to physiology. Super important. Yeah.
It is. It is important. And I think one of the things also that you touched on was the hydration, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of us tend to, I'm guilty of it. I've said this 100 times. I'm guilty of letting myself get dehydrated. Mm-hmm. Energy fuel definitely helps tremendously. But there's times, coach, where you just, you come off the track or whatever, and you're BSing with your buddies and you forget to grab your energy fuel, and it just happens, right? And dehydration happens quick.
Yes.
So I think a lot of people that can relate to being dehydrated. But, when you come back from one of these big events or a big race, what is the best way to rehydrate yourself? Because you don't want to drink, you don't want to start pounding liquid trying to rehydrate yourself, because that actually could be very dangerous for you.
And I want to elaborate on what you're saying for the sake of the listeners. If you start pounding a lot of straight water, that's what becomes dangerous, because what you're doing is essentially diluting the electrolyte content in your blood. That's what leads to a condition known as hyponatremia. By definition, it's just the dilution of the electrolytes. So what happens is we have a mechanism in our brain. When you're hungry, that mechanism gets triggered. And if we were to prick your finger and take a blood sample, you would already have low blood sugar. Stop and think about that. You as a racer, your ability to process speed is directly related to your blood sugar levels. So if you wait until you're hungry, your depth perception is already negatively impacted. When you're going to transition from standing to sitting, coming into a corner is going to be negatively impacted. You're going to literally be slower to transition from standing to sitting, sitting to standing. Your depth perception is going to make a nice flow of a corner. You're going to start making that a 3-point turn because you have depth perception issues. You're going to come in and you're going to bounce off the entrance, the apex, and the exit. If you have stabilized blood sugar, you're going to butter that corner. That's something that I can show you a million times over how consistent that is. When we come back to the subject of hydration that you mentioned, if you wait until you're thirsty, you're officially dehydrated. And I've heard this, especially with uneducated people. When somebody says only drink when you're thirsty, that is the worst thing you could ever do. For those of you that are watching us on YouTube, you see the size of my finger? That's the size of a cell membrane when it's properly hydrated. Well, if a cell membrane becomes dehydrated, the surface area becomes progressively smaller. Think about red blood cells. Their job is to grab oxygen and deliver it to working muscles. So Dan, I've had numerous people that have reached out to us and they're like, Rob, I had a really horrible weekend of racing. I need to get in shape. We do some baseline assessments and their fitness isn't the issue. We do a little bit of reverse engineering and we found out the reason why they rode so horribly was because they were dehydrated. They got busy. They got distracted. They got to the track late. They got up at 6 a.m. They drove to the race. They got registered. They got first practice in. They had little ones. They got their kids out. By the time they get back to themselves, it's 1 o'clock and they're like, man, I'm feeling kind of thirsty. And they realize they're already dehydrated. And just for those who are new listeners, 2%, if you're more than 2% dehydrated, so just for even numbers, if you're 100 pounds, you're only talking 2. If you're 200 pounds, you're still only talking 4 pounds, you're already dehydrated. And that can have a significant impact on both your speed and your endurance. So that's why I say, when somebody says to me, I had a bad weekend of racing, I think it's a fitness issue. It's not that I don't want to work with you, but I don't want you to become dependent on me. I want you to understand, why were you feeling lethargic, right? Dan, you and I've talked about this. You've had times where your training seems like it's going really, really well. And then on race weekend, it goes flat. Well, you can't have good fitness Monday through Friday and then lose your fitness on Saturday. Something had to undermine your fitness.
Yeah.
if your lap times are all of a sudden very inconsistent, first two motos of the day, they were very, very consistent. Then the inconsistency comes to the surface. That is 100% a blood sugar issue. It's not a fitness issue. You didn't lose fitness in 4 hours. It's a dehydration issue. It's a low blood sugar issue. Stop and think about, and I've talked to Jeff Ward about this quite a bit. Think about when he was in the Indy 500, right? He's coming out of turn number four. He's already looking at turn number one because they're going 230 miles an hour, 3 inches off the wall. Think about when you're trying to process 200 miles. I can't even begin to fathom it, right? 200 miles an hour just scares me thinking about sitting at my desk. Think about your brain's processing 200 miles an hour. Now, take that for all of the listeners. When you go from your day job and doing what you do and you drive to the track at 75 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden you're trying to put a 3-inch wheel into a 5-inch rut, think about the mental focus. A lot of us just do it without even thinking about it because we've been doing it for years. We're vet riders now, right? We don't even think much about it. But go back to when you were in school. Think about when you were studying in school for 8 hours, right? You came home and you wanted to tear apart the pantry. Why? Because the pantry has carbohydrates, plain and simple. So now what we've recognized is because we used our brain, we drained our liver, we're now hangry. We're so hungry that we're angry. Well, if we push that aside, what we do is we become extremely dangerous to ourselves on the track, because what's happened is we are in a position now where we can't manage the speed that we've created. And therefore, and this is, I hope everybody, I've got your undivided attention. When your brain, and Dan, this is how cool our body's been designed. When your brain is uncomfortable with the speed you're asking it to go, you have that little shifter down by your left foot and it goes, tink. That little brain of yours or big brain of yours will grab that little shifter and it will slow the bike down until it gets back to a comfortable level of speed. So think about the compounding effect of this. If you have low blood sugar, you're going to intuitively downshift until your brain says, okay, I'm cool with this entry speed. And you're frustrated because your lap times aren't getting any faster. We all want to pin it, right? And no disrespect to riding coaches who do this, but it's a dumb thing to do. Putting an orange cone up and saying, don't touch the brakes before you get to that orange cone has nothing to do when it comes to processing speed. Because Dan, you've been taught by every riding coach under the sun, you know, you should not lock the rear wheel up. You know, you should decelerate with the lion's share with the front brake. We all do that. We all know it, right? Well, then why does it not happen? Because your brain can't process all of it quickly enough. So therefore, we end up hitting the brakes way earlier than we should. We sit down earlier than we should because our brain's like, ah, yeah, thanks, Dan. I know this feeling. This feels good.
Yep.
So it rolls through. You get your transponder times back and you're like, where the heck did I go? Or you look at inconsistent lap times. They started really fast and they start to fall off pace really quickly. Well, we've got enough testing to validate that it's not a fitness issue. It's a dehydration and a low blood sugar issue.
And I find that a lot still, like just in my everyday riding, right? Where you go out and you're like, I'm going to throw down a couple of heaters, and you go out and you're like, oh man, that was a good lap. And then you look at the lap times and you're like, well, it was actually a really poor lap, you know?
But your brain was like, that was smoking fast, Dan. You were killing it. But unfortunately, what the brain's telling you is it let you go. It made you feel like you were going fast because that was the highest level of speed it was comfortable with. So it has a parent-teacher conference with yourself that says, oh, you were laying wood out there. You were killing it. And then all of a sudden you go and you look at your lap times. You're like, what happened here? Where did I go?
This thing's wrong.
It's got to be broke. It's got to be broke. And take it one step further when you're looking at all of this. Now, I'm going to get into a little bit of science. Please, I hope the listeners will stay very patient. I would be insulting the listener's intelligence if I said, hey, are you surprised that when you put your hand on your pipe and you gradually roll the throttle on, are you surprised that your hand gets pushed back further and further? No, Rob, as the combustion increases and the RPMs go up, of course, my hand's going to be blown back. Okay. Hold on to that illustration. When you take your heart rate up to race intensity, you have a byproduct called lactic acid. It's just converting stored sugar, glycogen, into energy. Don't make it any harder than it is, right? We have fuel. We have a spark plug. When it hits, we have combustion and we have waste. Same thing in the body. So what we do with the energy fuel is we know when the heart rate's going to go up, there's going to be a high presence of lactic acid. So we put a lactic acid buffer in the energy fuel. If you want to become a student of it, I want you to know the science behind it. And this is why, and I've shared this with our listeners before, I couldn't find a sports drink that met the intensity and the duration of activity. So that's why we have three formulations, because I know that you're going to go at a much higher intensity level for 6 to 10 minutes than you're going to do for a 30-minute plus two or a 3-hour GNCC. Well, then why are you using a sports drink that doesn't match your intensity? The science behind the energy fuel is, let's align how quickly do you need calories. The ease of conversion needs to match the intensity. If you're going balls to the wall, short, fast, and explosive, that carbohydrate molecule needs to be easily converted. But we also recognize you're going to have a lot of byproduct. So we put lactic acid buffer in there, beta alanine. When you start looking at the idea that you can't take in more than 300, well, if you mix it the way it's designed and you digest, you won't take in more than 300 an hour. See, I want to say this very humbly. I don't want you to think about it on race day. I want you to have so much confidence in the product and the science behind it that if you follow it the way it's intended, you can go focus on what line you're going to take when you get the whole shot or third or fifth or 15th or wherever you're going to go. Kind of like we were saying earlier, the pros get to just focus on ride, cross train, eat, sleep, and repeat. My job as a physiologist is to put things in front of people that just makes their job easier. You've got your daughter's bike and the gear, and when's she going to go out? And when do you get to go out? And how much time you have in between? And oh, she needs to be fed. And is she safe? Is she with somebody that you feel comfortable with?
Yeah.
How many pros are thinking about that? So the vet riders are one of my favorite crowds because their portfolio is so diversified, so split up, and they still get it all done at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know?
So how does one rehydrate? Like, you know, you do get dehydrated Monday morning. You've identified yourself as dehydrated. What is the best day to replenish your electrolytes, and how much should you be drinking? Can you just give us some insight on that?
Yes, sir. It's a very, very simple formula. When you wake up in the morning, your goal is to digest half of your body weight in water. So if you're 150 pounds over the next 10 hours, you need to consume 75 ounces, because that's going to answer your question. How do I make sure I'm hydrated? Well, let's talk about what you need to stay properly hydrated for the quality of life, for your health. We call it basal metabolic needs. It's very simple. Body weight in pounds divided by 2, and then divide that over a full day. I always say, as a general rule of thumb, just divide it by 10, 7A to 7P. If you get behind and you drink, try to play catch up after 7, you're just going to be up urinating all night long. So that's number one, is know what your hydration needs are based on body weight. No more, because if you do, you're going to flush out the electrolytes. Number two, if you're snacking on fruits and vegetables, they're already high in both electrolytes and water, not to mention the benefits of vitamins and minerals. If you want to talk even fiber for bowel movements, it's a win-win-win-win-win. So fruits and vegetables, if you just snack and graze on those, and then when you're going and you're looking at your sources of carbohydrates, just make sure they're low glycemic, high quality. And I know that I don't want that to sound so short as an explanation, but it's literally that simple, because your body doesn't know, nor does it care if it's Monday or Saturday. Your body doesn't know, nor does it care if you're racing one moto or 16 motos. Your body doesn't know, nor does it care if you're, all it knows is I've got needs. And if you don't meet them, your performance is going to be negatively impacted. What we want to do is reverse the conversation. What is it that we're going to expect of our body today? And then have a strategy before you begin.
Right.
And again, I don't want that to sound disrespectful or condescending at all. Most people will wait until they start to cramp and go, hey, maybe I'm dehydrated. Maybe I'm electrolyte depleted. How about we do a proactive approach? Like with our strength training, we always say it's prehab versus rehab.
Yeah.
I don't want you to try to mend a calf cramp. Let's do everything we know not to let the cramps ever ensue in the first place. So to come back to your question, you need to know what your fluid intake is. Half your body weight in pounds, your body weight in pounds divided by 2 is how many ounces. For those of you in the kilo side in the mills, I apologize, I don't have that memorized. The second thing is snack on fruits and vegetables. The third thing that you want to also take into consideration is, what is your sweat rate? So if you raced over the weekend and then you're going to go and work out on Tuesday, hopefully for those that have been listening to our show for any period of time, they know that they need to be paying attention to what their sweat rate is based on what they're doing. Are you riding 320s? Or are you riding 410s? Are you riding, are you doing cross training for a 90 minute bike ride at heart rate zone 2? Or are you doing 10 by 500 on a concept 2 row or at heart rate zone 4? I don't want this to sound disrespectful. Your sweat rate is going to be dictated by intensity and duration. So for somebody to say, oh, when you go exercise, you need to consume this amount of energy fuel. That's nothing could be further from the truth. If I'm doing a 90-minute bike ride, I have a different calorie and hydration need than if I'm doing 10 by 500 at heart rate zone 4. So my point in all of that is become a student of weigh yourself before and after every workout. Some people are like, I don't have time for that. Well, and again, don't take this as a disrespectful comment. I would rather you say to me, Rob, it's inconvenient for me to step on the scale before I get geared up. I understand, but is it going to be less painful or more painful than you driving 6 hours to a high profile race? You miss your hydration, you cramp up. How much time and money have you lost because of not knowing how much to drink proactively? And you're like, yeah, but I'm just a vet. Yeah, but you're a vet with a family and your time is worth more than money. I think everybody that's a vet would agree. Yeah. We value time way more than money. Now, we're not saying that we wipe our ass with $100 bills, but it's one of those situations where you're going to, and again, I say this very politely and respectfully, you're going to push back on me weighing yourself before you put your knee braces on and then weighing yourself when you're done. And we now know what your sweat rate is for a 20-minute moto at heart rate zone 4 at 100-degree humidity and 95 degrees. Well, now we know what you're, we can proactively start to offset that before you go out there. I mean, pro racing is very easy. And again, this is another pat on the back to the vet riders. Pro racing is very easy. When there's a TV, you know, contract in place, you know exactly when the second moto is going to drop, you know how much time you have in between, and you know what time the first moto is going to drop. Notice I did that backwards.
Yep.
It's very, very easy because you just keep going backwards to the start of the day. You know what time they have to start, how much they're going to graze on energy fuel. Practice number one, energy fuel. Time practice number two. You have an hour, hour and a half break. We get a little bit of easily digestible carbs. We're not doing a steak sandwich, but we're also not just doing liquid carbs because we have a long enough window. Might do a peanut butter and honey sandwich. We might do almond butter and a banana, something that has just a little bit of protein and fat, but easily broken down. Once you've got that 90-minute window bridged, you do the energy fuel before this drop of the gate. Gate drops, you know, you've got an hour with this halftime show. Now, I think it's what, an hour and a half now, Dan?
About an hour and a half. Yeah.
Right. So if you've practiced it enough, then when we get to race day, you're not even thinking about it. You're just ingesting what you know you need to keep your blood sugar level stabilized. You have confidence that that's going to improve your ability to process speed, literally, which is going to elevate your game. It's going to elevate and improve the consistency. Now I can get you, you know, you and I are at the track. You're just sitting here grazing, right? You know exactly how much you're taking in. You're not taking in more than 300 an hour. That way you avoid GI distress. Now, what is it that you and I get to talk about? Line choice, strategy. Are we going to negative split it? Are we going to sprint hard for two and then hit the cruise control? Are we going to be like Blake Baggett and negative split it? Come on harder the second half than we did the first half. What's a line choice? That corner is really tricky there. If you go to that inside, you might get, because you've got a big jump on the outside of it, somebody may rail lane three, come in with more momentum and be able to out clear you on the jump. Notice how we're talking strategy now while
yep.
your blood sugar stabilized on this side. That's what I love about physiology and nutrition. And I loved what you said earlier. There's not one listener where the principles of physiology and nutrition isn't exactly the same as Jet, Tomac, Cooper, Sexton, whoever your favorite rider is.
Yeah, just it's, how it's managed.
That's exactly right. And I want that to be a word of encouragement to the vet riders, because when you nail something as simple as hydration, when you nail electrolyte replenishment, when you understand your sweat rate, you just gap yourself from the competition. You literally, I mean, I can't tell you many people will step over a $100 bill to pick up a penny.
Yeah.
And I've said common. That a lot. Yeah. I've said that a lot, but think about, they've all got A-kit suspension and someone's dehydrated.
Yeah, that happens more times than not, coach.
Well, on this side of the phone, people will call me up and they're super irritated, right? They've hired a physical trainer. They've been training. Everything is great during the week. And then they just kind of screw the pooch on Sunday. And they're like, man, I got to get myself in shape. And as we said earlier, with just a few checks and balances, you can see if it's a true fitness issue. But I'd say 9 out of 10 times, it's going to be low sugar, low electrolytes, and dehydration. And those are all separate issues, because dehydration dictates how much oxygen's in the blood. So you might be an aerobic monster, but you might only be carrying 30% of the oxygen in the blood that's available because you're right. dehydrated. You might be able to have, you might have great strength to weight ratios. Well, a muscle needs fluid to contract. Muscle's over 76% water. So now all of a sudden the muscle's dehydrated. It can't contract with the same amount of power. You've just lost your sprint speed and your muscular endurance. I mean, I could just keep going through these analogies, but I want the listeners to get a, there's a breath of hope here that it's not always about having 4% body fat. It's about being hydrated, having balanced electrolytes, making sure that you don't let yourself become hungry or thirsty. Now we can use that aid kit. I don't care that you're packing 30 extra pounds. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
You're a vet rider. You got an aid kit. You can afford it. Enjoy it. What I want you to do is not overheat. And I don't want you to cramp up. And I want you to enjoy that quick transition. No, I mean, come on, Dan. There's nothing better than just third gear tapped. And then you just lay that thing over like you're dragging levers in the corner. I mean, I don't care who you are. There's no, there's a couple better feelings in life. but we won't go there on this show here today, but I think the vet racers all know what those, as my dad says, about going to the restroom. He used to always say, there's only one thing in life that's more enjoyable than going to the restroom. And for our vet riders, I'll say restroom, being intimate, and butter in a corner, dragging pegs or dragging levers. Those are probably the three best feelings in our world. So
totally
male or female.
I want to address the physical pain, Coach, that I'm feeling this morning, and probably a lot of our vet riders coming back from Mammoth are feeling. One of the things I wanted to touch on was chiropractors and massages. How important are those for recovery? Are they necessary? I'd like to get your insight on that.
I want you to think about those two as one cannot exist without the other. And if you've gone to chiropractors and you've been kind of bait and switched, I understand there's a lot of snap and crack docs. There's a lot of net, hey, they'll try to get you to buy 20 services for a flat amount. I understand that. I don't want you to think that I'm not aware that those kinds of positions exist. When I give this illustration, Dan, I want to make sure that I don't go too quickly. And I'm going to lean on you for the sake of the listeners that it's crystal, crystal clear. Muscles anchor off of bones. So think about it. If every muscle has an origin and an insertion, the easiest illustration would be your bicep. It originates in the elbow, inserts up in the shoulder. You could say they go back and forth. I'm not interested in arguing which one's the origin and the insertion. Just imagine every muscle has two ends. If a bone, particularly when we're dealing with the spinal, if the bone is rotated forwards or backwards, and if you think about, for all the people who are listening to this or watching on YouTube, imagine an anatomical chart, or just take your finger, Dan, and if you put it on the back of your neck, those are the vertebral parts of the spinal cord, okay? The side of those are called the spinous process. So every muscle attaches to a bone. So if a bone is out of alignment, it doesn't matter how much you massage the muscle, you're never going to relieve the tension until you get the two ends closer to one another. Think about you and I holding a rope. If it's taut, unless you and I step a step closer, it's never going to get softer in the middle. So if you have a massage therapist that comes in and you're on my table and I'm working your shoulders and your back, you're going to feel good maybe for 30 to 60 minutes. Because when I it's called effleurage, as I'm doing my massage on your shoulders and back, that friction is going to create vasodilation. That muscle is going to naturally relax and it's going to elongate. Well, as you go about the rest of your day and you get ready to go to bed at night, the blood always centralizes around the heart. So therefore the muscle tissue becomes tighter because it becomes cold. Now that's a compounding issue. You have a vertebrae that's out of alignment. So it's keeping tension in a muscle. The muscle, like for you, right? You went and you worked the daylights out of them this weekend. Well, now they're sore because there's been microfilament tears. The bones are out of alignment. You're a perfect storm for a torn muscle tissue. So for example, if one of our listeners has a vertebrae that's rotated either anteriorly or posteriorly, it's rotating forwards or backwards, they could go to reach for their young child in a bassinet and blow their back out. The baby only weighs 6 pounds. You can bench press 340. But that little baby, because what's happened is you have a muscle that's already hypertonic and you just literally, the straw that breaks the camel's back, you went just a tad bit too far. The stretch reflex engages. That's a defense mechanism inside the muscle tissue that keeps the muscle from tearing itself. So when you're looking at a massage therapist, they are of no value unless the vertebrae are in alignment. And a chiropractor adjustment is going to be of no value if the muscles are hypertonic. They're just going to pull the bone right back out of alignment. So now we're back to the rhetorical chicken and the egg. The best case scenario, go to a chiropractor who has a massage therapist. You go in, you share why you're there. got this crick in my neck. I just don't feel like I've got this twinge in my shoulder. The chiropractor does their assessment. They see where the vertebrae are rotated anteriorly or posteriorly. Your pelvic girdle could be the same way. It could be tilted up or down. It could be tilted forwards or backwards. It's called a pelvic tilt, literally. Well, think about it. If the pelvic is tilted upward, well, one muscle is over elongated and the other one is super short. So if you ever like hurt your right leg and you notice how much you load up the left side of your body, it's called a compensatory adjustment. Well, now think about how your body's compensating. Because you can't reach your arm forward because your shoulder won't allow the muscles to extend as far as possible, they're going to shorten up. Now you have limited range of motion. It throws your biomechanics off on the motorcycle. So a perfect scenario would be Dan comes to my table. He lays down. The chiropractor comes in and says, hey, Rob, Dan's C3, C4, L1, L2 is anteriorly rotated. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to focus on that around those vertebrae. Now, when the chiropractor comes in, he or she adjusts that. The muscle is just comfortable enough. It's just relaxed enough that when the adjustment is put into place, the bones don't get pulled back out of alignment because we've removed the tension in the muscle. Now, on the reverse of that, I can go in and do massage all day long. You go home, call me the next day. I still have my problem. Yeah, because the vertebrae are not in anatomical neutral. So the best combination is, and I say this very respectfully, you need to let your chiropractor and your massage therapist know that you're serious. If you're listening to the show, you're serious. You may not be getting paid, but you're serious about your health and performance. Unfortunately, out of respect to the chiropractors, they are so used to someone coming in and Dan, you're the chiropractor and I report to you. And you say, Rob, I need you to do some contrast therapy. I need you to do a little bit of trigger point therapy. I need you to do an Epsom salt bath, because what I'm going to do today is your spine is so out of alignment. I'm going to kind of kick the top of the anthill off. And I know that you're going to be sore. So Rob, what I need you to do is I'm going to do my adjustment with my massage therapist. But when you go home, you need to do contrast therapy, Epsom salt, and do this over 4 to 5 days or in 2 days and come back on Friday. I go home. I don't do shit. I come back. You're like, Rob, did you do the work at home? I'm like, no, but fix me, doc. Get me back. You're like, dude, I'm going to stir the stink pot by kicking off the top of the anthill. I need you to do some work at home. Well, now we're stuck in the idea that our vets were also damn busy. Yeah. I don't have time to sit in an Epsom salt bath, Rob. I maybe logistically don't even have a bath to sit in. I only have a shower. And that's where we have to work in the real world. But if you go to a chiropractor, and I would recommend to all the listeners, go to a high-end cycling shop or go to a high-end running store. Everybody there is getting massage and everybody there is getting chiro. Find one that's got a chiro and a massage in-house. That's a perfect combo. Because then when you leave for that hour and a half, 2 hours, you got an adjustment. Excuse me. You got assessed. You got some massage. The adjustment was put into place. The massage therapist comes in and tries to quiet everything down. Very, very light effleurage, right? Then when they send you home, you go do your contrast therapy. You go to bed. You wake up the next morning. The muscles are like, oh, thanks, Dan. That massage felt really, really good. It's a chiropractor, but the chiropractor was complemented with the massage. So the tension's out of the tissue. The spine is in alignment. Now the muscles aren't in a power struggle with the bone. The bone's not being pulled out of a line by a tight muscle. Now you have everything clicks. What's amazing is watch what happens to your speed and endurance. Because now when a muscle has no tension in it, it can contract to its fullest length. You just increased your power and you just increased your muscular endurance right off the bat.
And that would explain why, right? When you go to a chiropractor or a massage therapist, it temporarily feels good, right? Mm-hmm. Or you temporarily get relief. But a lot of times I find like if I go just to the chiropractor, right? And I don't do anything after, in some instances, I feel worse the next day.
Absolutely. It's a small, it's a small car accident is what it
but
is.
But I feel good right when I leave the office. Mm-hmm. So that makes complete sense. So really they should be done in parallel to one another.
Always.
And I think that's great input because I don't think a lot of, including myself, right? I try to go get either a massage, you know, or go to the chiropractor the same day, you know, sometimes in the evening, I'll try to schedule both, but I got to go to two separate places. But if you could find somewhere that does everything in house, I think that would be, as you said, that's the best case scenario. So,
well, and if you can't find a chiropractor that has one, because you have logistics and stuff like that, what I would do is build a relationship with a good sports physio, a massage therapist physio, And then like go to the chiropractors, try to schedule it towards the end of the day and then have the massage therapist meet you at the house. So that way you've got within the next, you know, couple hours from getting the adjustment to getting back on the table, getting the tension out of the tissue. Then when that massage therapist leaves, you can go contrast therapy, soak in a pool, go do a jacuzzi, whatever. Because the idea here is, yes, you went through the due diligence of getting the work done, but now you need to give it what it needs to stick. Now, I want to go back to what we said earlier, Dan. You've got a riding coach who's extremely smart, extremely talented, and he is telling you that you need to be able to do something, elbows up, look far enough ahead. You need to squeeze your toes inward. You need to, you know, unhinge those hips, do all the stuff that these great riding coaches talk about. If a muscle is tight and a bone is out of alignment, you're never going to get in that biomechanical position. And the harder you try to get into that biomechanical position that you physically cannot get to is going to burn more calories. And do you see the downward spiral? You have a higher calorie burn rate. We talked about the idea, if you wait until you're hungry, you've already got low blood sugar. That's going to be sped up because while you're trying to get in that right attack position, there's so much internal resistance that your calorie burn rate is going to go up. Ironically, because there's so much internal resistance, your core body temperature goes up. Core body temperature goes up, you sweat more, you lose more electrolytes. The less electrolytes muscles have in them, the less they can contract. So do you see the compounding issue here? Now you've got a chronic domino effect. Tight muscles, out of aligned spine, internal heat, less range of motion. A restricted range of motion means less speed and less endurance, higher sweat rate, electrolyte depletion, less electrolytes for muscles to contract. You see how this is, it's kind of like when you've got a brand new bike and you've got a rusty chain. And you're like, why am I going through so much fuel? Because that chain is just sucking the fuel out of that brand new bike. And that's the same thing that we want to look at. No pun intended. We're only as strong as our weakest link. So I'm actually impressed that you brought that up because it does create a lot of confusion. I've had people that have said, man, I've gone to chiropractors and they're quacks. I said, no, they're not quacks. You just found the wrong one, unfortunately.
Yeah.
One little final note on that one. When you go to a massage therapist and or a chiropractor, they have to keep very detailed notes. And for me to serve you as a physiologist, other than your partner, nobody's going to know your body as intimately as that massage therapist and chiropractor. And what I want to know as a physiologist is, are we doing something in your strength program that's causing the shoulders to rotate forward? Well, you've already got tight chest muscles. I don't want to tighten muscles that are already hypertonic. I want to get these to relax, and then I want to strengthen the ones in between your shoulder blades. Now we get the body back into anatomical neutral. Like when someone complains that they have knee pain, first thing we look at is the balance of strength between the quads and the hamstring. If they're out of balance strength-wise, you're going to have knee pain. Strength to flexibility. If the quads are super strong, the easiest illustration that I can give is imagine going into a right-hand turn and you're struggling to not dab that foot. Is that because the hip flexors aren't strong enough to keep the foot elevated? Or is the hamstring so tight it keeps pulling the foot down on the ground? We've used that illustration before. But that's a perfect example of you have to have strength on the front and the back of the leg, or you're going to have knee pain. You have to have strength and flexibility on both sides. Otherwise, in this case, you're going to be dabbing your foot. Well, your riding coach is saying, keep your foot out of the rut. Well, you may not physically be able to. I'm not empowering an excuse. It's differentiating what could be the catalyst behind it. Now, come to a massage therapist, come to a chiropractor. If they're telling me that, hey, every time you come in, we're noticing that your shoulders are anteriorly rotated, I can adjust your strength program to put less stress on your chest and counterbalance in your shoulders. We get back to anatomical neutral. Now you get back out to the track and you're all of a sudden surprised that you have better biomechanics. Better biomechanics, consistent lap times. Then once we get consistency, then we can get improved speed. You put that together and now your continuum goes up. And then we're back to the vet rider trying to get done with Mammoth.
I know probably everybody's a little bit different, right, on their bodies and how often they should go get these treatments done. But as a general rule, coach, should one be doing this chiropractor massage once a week, twice a week? I know when you go to the massage or the chiropractors, a lot of them are notorious for, you know, oh, you buy this package, you know, it's you buy five, you get the sixth one for free, that type of thing. Or they're really... let's be honest, right? I'm just going to call it how it is, right? They're good salesmen, right? Oh,
Absolutely.
I want to see you in here for the next, you know, a four times a week for the next month. You know, that's the only way we're going to be able to fix you. They're good salesmen, right? So typically on average, how often should we be doing this? As somebody that's healthy, right? That doesn't have a specific issue. We're healthy, but we want to maintain, you know, good posture and you know, good muscle.
A perfect illustration how our conversations are not scripted, because the key word there is maintenance. If you're somebody and you go in once a month and the doctor doesn't really have much to adjust and there's really no chronic issues, that maintenance cadence is going to be sufficient. If you're somebody who, you know, you beat the shit out of yourself, you ride like Barsha, you're always on that ragged edge, maybe hit the ground quite a bit, you're going to figure out probably you need to go every week. You may find something in between there. I always say with my clients, I want you to go once a month minimum, because what I want is a checks and balance. I want to make sure that you're, because our programs, every training block is between 6 and 8 weeks long. So if I can get one chiropractic adjustment and or assessment with a massage therapist and a chiro on a 4 week basis, we never get too far gone. You made a comment about them being good salesmen, and out of all fairness to the chiropractors and massage therapists, if we wait until everything is broke, it takes more work for them to undo what we've screwed up. So in all fairness, pain is a hell of a motivator, right? Why do we pay so much money on an A-kit? Because we want that plush feeling of being able to be a little bit faster. Yeah, you could argue that the A-kit could be a little stiffer, but you get the gist of what I'm saying. Pain is a hell of a motivator. And that's why I always say, even everything we've spoken about here today, I want to be everything we do to do it proactively. Like I said earlier, prehab versus rehab, same thing applies here. Go before it becomes a problem. Allow me as your physiologist to, okay, we're going to take that information. We're going to incorporate into your strength program. So it's not just about you keeping the bones in alignment and, you know, having good range of motion. It's about taking that optimized biomechanics and putting it into the world of speed, muscular endurance, sprint speed, avoiding late race endurance or late race fatigue because of a lack of endurance. I could put you on a bicycle and you might be able to go for 90 minutes at sub threshold, but then we get you on a motorcycle, and because of the demands of a 200 pound, you know, big bike, 200 plus pounds, now all of a sudden you don't have quite the muscular endurance. Well, wait a second. We validated that you have muscular endurance. It's just not in the area that you want. This is a tremendous source of frustration for our vet riders. They're super fit over here in the gym, and then when they take it to their passion, they get on the dirt bike. And that's why I say, as humbly as I can, it breaks my heart when somebody reports themselves to me. They've been very dedicated for years, but they've been doing it the wrong way. They have really tight hamstrings. They've been told that a deadlift and a squat's the best thing in the world to improve. Yeah, textbook wise, but you're so damn tight, you can't even tie your shoes. So why are you doing a deadlift? Why are you doing a free weight squat on a squat rack? Your biomechanics are not there to do it without the load. Why are we going to start doing that with load? Now, again, I don't want that to come across as cynical. My goal is to identify and eliminate before it becomes a problem. Not throwing massage therapists or chiropractors or anyone under the bus, but hey, when you come to them and you're already beaten and battered, they're going to get that big ticket of 10 because you're in pain. And they're like, hey, it's going to take 9 sessions. Well, you're going to pay for 10 of them because right now you're in pain and you don't mind putting that credit card down. Unfortunately, if you went in and it was maintenance mode, hey, you may not need to come back for another 3 or 4 weeks before it becomes a problem. And that's why, like with my athletes, I always use the biomechanics. We're big into filming. I want to see your biomechanics on the bike. Then I know what to work on. We do testing every 6 weeks so that I can always address your biggest weakness. You know, you keep reverse engineering that. And that's what brings us to, hey, I moved my mom this weekend. I'm extremely sore. How should I recover from it correctly? Well, you got to know what muscles you use. Well, we know what you use on the motorcycle. So I can give you specific soft tissue maintenance before you go. It's going to improve your speed and your efficiency and your consistency. Well, now you're done. You got to factor in electrolytes, carbs, and protein. Now the muscles have recovered. Well, how do we keep you back in a maintenance mode? Chiropractic, a massage. We'll talk the next time that we're together. We've had a lot of people hit us up on strength training specific for vets. It's not the same as someone who's 14 years old. It's not the same as a 20-year-old. It's not much different, but there definitely has to be some factors taken into consideration. So we'll do a deep dive on that. Actually, it'd be two shows from now, because I want to get your special guest on for this next show.
You got it. Well, Coach, we're about out of time. This one has been real. I think all the vets are going to appreciate this one, because I guarantee you there's some sore mofos out there like myself, and I didn't even race a ride this weekend, but this was very helpful. I do want to, I know, Coach, you don't like to turn this into a sales pitch or anything, but I do want to let the listeners and viewers know that they can go to the Coach Rob store to purchase the energy fuel, recovery fuel. It is the best. And I know you hate it, Coach, because I always talk so highly of the energy fuel. It is the absolute best. It tastes awesome. It doesn't taste like shit like the other ones. That's just my personal opinion. But they're great tools for us vet guys. And then also Complete Racing Solutions. If you're looking for, more in-depth training program or anything like that, make sure you guys visit Complete Racing Solutions. Coach, anything you'd like to add?
The one thing I'd like to add to that is I'm an athlete like you guys. I love to ride and train. One of the things I'm really proud of is on the energy fuel side of things is we have a total of 8 flavors, because I totally get it. You know, Dan, back in the day when there was only lemon, lime, and orange, and maybe fruit punch, kind of get burned out on those flavors. So thanks to our friends at Infinite, we do have a broad spectrum of flavors. So you think about it, you've got a multitude of flavors. You've got 3 different formulations. My goal is that you guys enjoy it. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, when it becomes a necessity, you want it to taste good, but more importantly, you want it to taste good and do something for you that's pro, you know, the way it's designed to. So when we say there's a science behind it, it's not just a marketing, statement. It's facts. So I appreciate the kind words, and I hope everybody will give it a shot. And I want to thank everybody for sticking with us and all the way through show number 4 here. They're going quick.
It's funny too, because I'm a fan of the pink lemonade energy fuel, and you keep saying, Dan, we've got other flavors. You should try something different. I'm a creature of habit, but
I am too.
It's all good stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, Coach, thank you so much. All of our vets, all of our weekend warrior riders, thank you guys so much for listening and supporting the show. Make sure you guys like and subscribe, leave those comments, send us those DMs, give us suggestions, because we're here for you. We'll see you on the next one.
Peace.